This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch the Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Boy, in the middle of the stretch drive, as we bring you into 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts right now, Spotify, iHeart, Apple. Where are you? Your Podbean as well?
Amazon Music today.
We love them all and appreciate their support. Off-ice stuff almost taking a bit of the spotlight back from what we are looking for in the battle for the playoffs. So you've got the World Cup of Hockey announcement with the host teams and the general managers meeting in Florida.
And usually everybody accuses the managers of having a boondoggle. And there is a little bit of doggling.
There's some pickleballing.
Yeah, and there was always a little bit of golf involved in the afternoon. You know, if Kenny Holland's in the meeting, there's golf by 2:15 or 3 o'clock. So that's just a reality of what goes on at managers' meetings. But this is the one time this year where I think the managers who are through the trade deadline now. Get a chance to sit back and say, where's the game? How do we make the game better? Are there issues in the game? And there are teams that will think that there are big issues. There are teams that think the game is great. But these guys, the 32 guys and the league people, are constantly thinking about how to make the game better. And over the last 22 or 23 years, since the work stoppage in 2004, they've tweaked every once in a while, and the game is faster, the game is better, more different sized players can play the game. You don't have to be 6'4" and a heavy hitter to play the game. You can be 5'11" and play the game now. And all of that stuff, Darren, starts at these managers' meetings.
Is there a big topic in the game right now?
I suspect that there'll be discussions about on-ice stuff. I do think that because it's current right now, I think there'll be a discussion about supplemental discipline and what the Radko Gudas, Austin Matthews incident occurred and the noise around it. That can't go away the way it in the game.
But Gudas hadn't been suspended for 7 years.
No, but the severity of the penalty, was it hard enough, is going to be the question. Matthews is gone for at least 16 games and Gudas only gets 5. Is that right? The process of how the hearing occurred, why was it decided that it was just a phone hearing as opposed to in person, where you could have still given him 5 games but create a discussion about it could be up to 10 or 15 games. George Parros will be in front of that group, and that will be a factor, and people will have opinions on that, particularly now that Judd Moldaver has said something, particularly now that Connor McDavid has said something. That will certainly be a discussion. I also think there's going to be off-ice stuff. I think there's going to be a discussion of the playoff format. You know, should we be going 1-8? Should we be going?
Oh my goodness, please.
No, I'm just telling you. You and I both know the answer. The commissioner's happy with the way things are, but
so am I.
The 1-8 is going to be discussed. It's going to be part of the playoff arm. The other thing is that remember, this is the first year of the new CBA, and I think there's still a ton of questions about how the playoff salary cap works. I think there's, and I think now that they've gone through a trade deadline and how the new CBA impacted the trade deadline with third parties carrying salary, not a lot. I think a lot of that stuff will get hashed out over the next couple of days.
It's fascinating. I miss standing outside the boardroom just waiting for the exodus and trying to catch up with managers as they scattered.
Well, the league has gotten better than they designate four or five to stay and talk. They do. Mm. They've gotten better at that. I can tell you right now, having done both, having sat in the meetings for 5 years and sat outside with you for 10, being inside for 5 was more fun.
Oh, yeah. Is it true that they all line up at the door and then there's a countdown, 3, 2, 1, and the door opens and they just...
Not true.
Really?
Not true. But
because it looks like they're ready to go.
But I can tell you right now, and the room is set up in a giant square with monitors in the middle, so there's monitors to see everybody. Or see all the video that they're going to do. I can tell you right now that every manager is looking for the other manager to make the first break. So if a senior manager goes out the door first, I'm a junior manager, I'm following him because everybody will swarm that manager and nobody will swarm me. I can dart by,
tuck in right behind.
And then, of course, there's some in the old days. There's some great managers that were around a long time that would come out, and there's two in particular that would come out with Cheshire grins on their faces and walk right by and pretend everybody in the media is their best friend and not say a word. Lou Lamoriello and Glenn Sather,
and never get quoted.
Never get quoted. Not once.
Well, he was in these meetings. He helped run these meetings, influential on these general manager meetings. Former senior vice president of the National Hockey League, Mike Murphy, who played, coached, and helped mold our game. He's coming up next on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Stay with us.
NHL TV is now on DAZN. Hockey lives here.
Here we go.
Watch every game from every team. The best players in the world. And the coldest plays on ice. Watch up to 4 games at once for the ultimate NHL experience. Sign up now at DAZN.
Save the well wishes for St. Patrick's Day when Mike Murphy joins us, former senior vice president of the National Hockey League. You got your green on. You're looking good, buddy.
Thank you. I'm feeling good. I'm out here in the West Coast. I know you're not far, and it's nice to have Shannon on, but Shannon doesn't have any green on, so he's going to be excommunicated after this is over. I'm going to call the Pope. I know Pope Leo, so I'm going to call him.
You probably played with Pope Leo. You're so old.
No kidding. Eh? No kidding.
So, Darren, just so you know, I sent Mike a video last week of the 1978 World Hockey Championship. Mm. And there he was playing left wing.
Yeah.
For Team Canada. who was your centerman? Was it Marcel?
Dennis Marouk.
Oh, Dennis Marouk. That's right.
And Bobby McMillan. We didn't score much. So then they put Unger in the middle, who I played with in St. Louis. So it was a better combination. But we were a ragtag group. I think we finished third, which was incredible because the way it unfolded is certain teams beat certain teams and you end up getting through, you know. It was a lot of fun. We were great.
That was that old round robin system. There was no... You know, semifinals So did you get a medal?
Oh, yeah, we got a bronze medal, yeah.
Where is it? Come on, it's got to be on the mantle somewhere.
Well, yeah, it's on the mantle in Toronto. I make my grandkids pass through it and worship every time they do.
Did you coach in the World Championship too?
Yeah, twice. Once in Moscow in 89, that was Chernobyl too, because when we flew out, Chernobyl had just happened. Seriously, we flew right over it. And in 89 in Bern, 86 in Moscow. Yeah, with Pat Quinn both times, yeah.
Wow.
Bern was beautiful. I didn't even mind Moscow that much. It was tough because the food was a little rough after a while, you know. The chicken he ate there had as much meat on it as your pinky.
So we're watching the managers meetings right now, and you used to be a large part of that. Let's back up. How far in advance would the agenda sort of come together or begin to come together?
Well, the official agenda didn't really come together till like 3 or 4 days before, because it's a work in process to get to it. What Coley would usually do is, our job in the video room was, when we would see something unusual, whether it be a rule, whether it be something with commercial breaks, something with intermissions, we would make a note of it. So over a period of time, we'd accumulate a list of issues that I would call video room issues, but related to the game. And Coley would send out a memo, you know, probably 2 months in advance to the managers meeting, and say, if you have any issues you want to discuss, they could be legal issues, they could be central registry issues, they could be mostly hockey operations related issues. So rules, situations to do with the game. And they would slowly trickle in. And in about a month, he'd send another reminder. And then 2 weeks, he'd send another reminder. Then he would accumulate the lists and, you know, pass it by Gary and Bill to see what they were going to add in, because they always had, we had legal issues we had to talk about. And then the list would be, or the agenda would be formulated, and it would go out. And it was always fairly secretive, because Coley didn't want the media getting to it and parsing it. So it was, that was kind of the process we went through, but it was very thorough. And, some managers would send in 7 or 8 items they didn't like. Others would send none in. So it was.
And then there was David Poyle. David Poyle would send in 55.
Yeah, David was tough, because and then when 54 of them weren't on the agenda, he wasn't happy. You know?
And I say that with love, because David's one of the good people in the game. But
we had many a battle, David and myself. I sit with him now in the committee for the Hockey Hall of Fame. So it's we laugh at some of the things that happened. You know, I was on speed dial for sure.
Hey, so this is the, you know, the long-term meeting, the 3-day meeting.
Yeah.
There's a meeting in November around the Hall of Fame. So how does one general manager's meeting differ from the other?
Well, the meeting in November is usually to evaluate what's gone on. If we've made some changes the year before and they've been instituted, how are they working? And it was more or less a discussion of the game. And if there was some issues, they would be pushed forward to the March meeting. Okay. And then over that period of time, from November to March, our video room was to accumulate data on any of those issues, you know, and collect information and build videos. The March meeting is a thorough meeting, and it's very comprehensive. We would start on a Monday at 8 o'clock sharp. We would go to 2 o'clock. The next day we would start at 8 o'clock again, go to about 2 o'clock, sometimes a little earlier, because the second day one of those days we'd usually designate for golf and fishing. And then the third day, the Wednesday, we would start at 8 o'clock and be done by 10:30, because everybody wanted to get back to their teams by that time. So it was a very thorough meeting. We would beat a lot of things up. The way we would beat things up, or the way we would discuss things, would be Coley would often formulate breakout groups. And the breakout groups would sometimes take 3 or 4 topics or 5 topics and beat them up. And when you've got 8 or 9 guys talking in a small breakout group, you get a lot more feedback, a lot more information than when you do with the large group. And in the group, there'd be someone like myself, there'd be somebody to keep notes, and there would often be somebody from legal to make sure we were on the right path. And after that day one, with the breakout groups, we'd all get back together in the morning the next day and sometimes break away again and then come back a couple hours later, and then discuss all the matters we had beaten up over the last 2 days. And a lot of times, if you were in my group, John, and we had a discussion on, say, kicked pucks or something, and it's interesting because I'm laughing because I have the agenda in front of me here, and it's In 2011, one of the topics was kick pucks, and that was one of my topics. I had to present that to the group. Well, I'm looking, there's kick pucks on this one, so it doesn't go away, and it's almost like what goes around comes around. And anyways, I would go to you and say, John, you know, we talked about kick pucks in my group. What was our conclusion? And you would kind of summate what we had talked about in the group. And so as the leader of the group, I wouldn't opinionate myself. I'd pass all those thoughts that we developed onto the group of guys I had in my situation, in my breakout group.
So there is a little bit of Groundhog Day in this thing?
Oh, yeah.
When you get new managers in?
Yeah. And well, that's all. And I think, you know, that's a really good point. Like one of the things I think Colin Campbell, the commissioner, have done an amazing job at is educating the group of people who run the teams, the general managers. You know, and the more you educate them, the less your phone rings game night, because they've seen it, they've done it, we've walked them through it. They don't like it. Like this kick puck keeps resurfacing because somebody had a goal scored on them where they thought it was kicked and our guys ruled it wasn't. So it always resurfaces. And inevitably, whenever we have a general manager's meeting, and I'm just looking at this this Gudas hit on Matthews, mm-hmm. we always have some play that upsets everybody. You know, one year it was Savard got hit. One year it was Drury got hit. And they were nasty hits, but they were legal. So we had to start working on how can we make these hits? And they were kind of blindside lateral hits that were, and the general manager whose player is lost, in this case, it would be Brad Treveling. He was irate, you know, and that general manager would usually be irate, and the group would kind of beat these different plays up and come to some form of a conclusion. So that if we had to make a rule change, which we did in the Savard hit, we outlawed blindside lateral hits, you know, it's since evolved from there, and the player safety department has now taken all that over, but that's inevitably what happens. And it makes for real good discussion. And the one thing I will say about the managers, I would always leave the meeting very impressed, because very few guys would have their own agenda. You know, I want lots more hooking and holding because my team's slow and we play better if it's slow, those type of things. And everybody did what was better for the game, and there'd be some debate on it. But that always impressed me, is everybody kind of put their own team situation away and said, hey, let's do what's best for the game. And I think as you look at the game, as I look at it from when I joined the league in 2000, what it is doing, what's happening now is incredible. Like I sit and I actually watched the Kings play last night, and their second period was as good a period as I've seen them play all year. And I see a little more of them because I'm out here on the West Coast, and there was speed, there was physicality. It was the goaltending was exceptional. So, you know, I see more and more games like that. I watch Vegas play a lot because they're in my time too. And, I think you look at the standings, I mean, it's so close. Anybody can beat anybody. Like what's happened to Buffalo, the resurrection of the Sabres has been incredible, and it's fun to watch. So, because they've been beleaguered and beaten up for so long. And now I think a lot of it has to do with what the managers have done over a long period of time. They've made the game better and faster, and the skilled players surface more often. So, kudos to those guys. It's their meetings are great, and that's why they have them.
Do you remember a time period or a gathering that offered the most debated topic at a general manager's meeting?
Fiery? Yeah. Well, yeah, for sure. It's always been goalie interference. Always. You know, and I go back, I want to say it was about 2005, 2006. Dale Tallon was the manager in Florida, and one night in Toronto, one of the Leaf players, I want to say it was Colton Orr, just blew Luongo right up, went right through the crease, blew Luongo right. Like Luongo was literally in the corner when the puck went in the net, and the goal counted. When Dale, like... about a week later, when Dale calmed down, we finally started to dissect this thing. And that was, that went probably, so goalie interference went on the agenda. And probably for the next 4 or 5 years, we debated goalie interference. I can't remember when goalie interference became, you know, we actually made it part of a review process, but it was beaten up to death. And Dale was hilarious in the meetings because of what had happened and the, how obvious this play was that shouldn't have counted, but it did. And those are the type of corrections that you have to make in our game. And we continue to make them. And there's still the odd faux pas where you say, I don't know about this. Like I watched a glove pass the other night, offensive zone game stoppage, and the guys got it absolutely right. And the announcers were great. They knew it. And it's, you know, you like to see that happen. Although I hate the offside rule. I think everybody hates it, but the, you know, the horse is out of the barn. You can't do anything about it. And, you know, and when we, lots of debate on this too, Darren, we'd always say, well, what if the player who was offside doesn't touch the puck? He's never involved in the play. Or what if the offense, the defensive team gets the puck, it has possession again. And what if they don't score for 5 seconds or 10 seconds? So we'd always try to qualify those offside plays so we could kind of eliminate them. But we never arrived at a decision. And I still think that might be in the cards down the road. You know, we got the skate off the ice now, which was pretty good. But it's those two topics were always heavily debated because they slow the game down. You know, they slow the game. But again, you want to get it right. And the old theory was if it's illegal play, then it's an illegal play. And so, those are two topics that won't go away, and we still have them almost nightly. I watched the Pittsburgh, who are they playing? Pittsburgh Buffalo game the other night, and there was a goalie interference play. And I'm sitting at home here, and I sent Coley a text. And I said, I like the call. You know, there was some infringement on the crease, but the puck went in the net. It was a rebound play. Letang was pushing one of the Buffalo players. And there was very slight contact with the goal. Anyways, it was one of those, and they called goal on the ice. And the old theory that we've always held to was whatever the call is on the ice, you cannot change it unless you have 100% proof it's wrong. So, you know, when the dust settled, and at the time, Pittsburgh was killing a 5-minute major penalty. So now it's really a delicate situation because if you challenge that play and get it wrong, the goal counts and you go two men down. And sure enough, Pittsburgh elected to challenge it, which I like as I look back at the guys we had in the video room. They would say, don't do it. Timing's wrong. You can't do it. As much as we might think we're right, the call on the ice is a goal and they're not going to reverse themselves if this isn't 100%. And sure enough, they challenged it. Buffalo scored another game, 3-1. The game was basically over at that point. So, you know, it's a moving target, the game. And that's the beauty of it.
So you talked about something there briefly, Mike, about taking your time to get it right. If there has been a complaint in the last 8 to 10 years is, oh my gosh, this is taking too long. We got to be quicker. How conscious of time is the group in the situation room?
Yeah, very conscious. And part of it is the commissioner wants it done accurately and he wants it done quickly. So, you know, we've had lots of discussions about this, and that's why we have 17 cameras in the games now that we have access to. So a lot of times, our guys in the video room will say, when I say our guys, the guys in the video room will say, Murph, this is offside. So Buffalo's probably going to challenge it or whoever the team is. And sure enough, they get it, you know, and our guys have already got it. And other ones, Murph, this is close at the goal. Boy, this could be goalie interference. So we're already setting the table to do the challenge. Now, the process is such that you get the referees over, the linesmen over, and have a discussion with them and show them the video. So there's always going to be a little lag. But we have gotten so much better on this with the technology that exists today. We have gotten our guys are so accurate because of the protocol that's gone on before. And But time is all. I remember one time I was on an offside challenge, and the technology wasn't that great, and we were 7 minutes. 7 minutes we're on a freaking offside, and I know the commissioner wasn't very happy with me or with the whole group of us, and rightly so. Can't stop a game for 7 minutes. It's craziness, but the group has gotten really good, and they're efficient and accurate and consistent. So. But time, quickness and accuracy, really important, John.
I know people listening have all kinds of questions, so we'll try to fire up as many as we can as we continue with Mike Murphy on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon, back right after this.
Car shopping should be exciting, not exhausting. That's where Car Gurus comes in. They have advanced search tools, unbiased deal ratings, and price history, so you know a great deal when you see one. It's no wonder that Car Gurus is the number one rated car shopping app in Canada. When you're car shopping on your phone, it shouldn't be a maze. You need to see all the information. With the Car Gurus app, you can. Powerful search tools that you see deal ratings, price history, and dealer reviews on listings all in one place. And you can turn on real-time price drop alerts so you never miss a great deal. Car Gurus connects you with trusted dealerships when you're ready, ensuring a transparent, hassle-free buying process. Buy your next car today at cargurus.ca. Make sure your deal is the best deal. That's cargurus.ca. Cargurus.ca.
Okay, let's continue down the path, Mike, of video review. What's the most difficult play to get right?
Well, probably over the years, and this has improved with the technology, but high sticks are always really tough because we have two rules for high sticking. In the field of play, we have a high sticking penalty or high stick play that's above your shoulders.
Right.
And then if you score a goal, it's the crossbar. So there's two different bars that you are using, and the goals that are scored by high sticks are always tough because you've got a two-dimensional play on the video, and it's you don't know the depth of the net behind it. You don't know, was the player's stick going up or down? Where did it hit the player's stick? Those are always really tough, but cameras have gotten so much better now, and so many productions have cameras at ice level, so we get kind of a bird's eye view or a lateral view of a play. But those were always the toughest, and again, we would always revert back to what's the call on the ice, because those four officials looked at it, and in today's world, they always consult on plays like that. What did you see, John? What did you see, Darren? You know, here's what I got. I didn't see the play. And you get a much more accurate reading now. And I think, again, this has been, we've gotten it to the point where it's almost as good as it you can get it until you start, probably AI is going to come in and say, okay, this is 4 inches above the crossbar. This is 2 inches below the crossbar. Now, will that happen in a short time? I don't know. But that's happening, yeah.
Not goalie interference. Sorry,
guys. What?
Not goalie interference being the biggest. Oh, you got. Go ahead, Darren.
I was just going to follow up on the high stick. You ever look at a player's height and go?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. The guys are always.
He's 6'2", and
well, they're always reaching. Their knees are bent. You know, there's always issues. You know, and I think the rule reads, you know, the height of the player as he is upright or, you know, not bent kneed. And that bent kneed gives you a little bit of leeway to make the ruling stay on the ice, which I've always liked the ruling staying on the ice because the teams are out there. The referees are out there. They see it firsthand. And a lot of times when you show a referee and he goes, no, I'm staying with my call. I think this is the right call. So, and John, you mentioned goalie interference. Yeah. Goalie interference is always a tough one because it's so subjective, you know, what you think is goalie interference. And we have tried to really define it and put in place guidelines. You know, did the skater go to the blue on his own? Was the skater pushed? Could the goalie play his position? Where did the puck go in the net? those are all, and there's about five or six we've put together where if you're a video coach, you'd hang your hat on those. And I think we've gotten it pretty good. And as I said the other night, that Buffalo Pittsburgh one was really close, but I had to, and one of the things is we don't want to change a call on the ice if we're not 100% sure. I know mm-hmm. the Pittsburgh fans are saying, hey, this is goalie interference, but the Buffalo fans are saying, no, it's not. He didn't bother him from making the save. So you really have to be neutral in your thinking, and you have to apply all the rules we've put in place and all the guidelines. And if you do that, you don't make many mistakes.
Okay. So one of the big external complaints is that goalie interference is not consistent. What was goalie interference in Los Angeles on a Tuesday was not goalie interference in Washington on a Thursday. Do you believe that?
No. I think that's teams reacting emotionally to the play. And we would line up all the questionable plays, like goalie interferences. When we went to the manager's meeting, we'd have seven or eight in the hopper and say, okay, let's go through these. These are tough. This manager was really upset at this one. This team was upset at that one. We would go through them and we'd poll the managers. What do you think on this one? And rarely are we wrong. Would it be 100%? No, we'd be 7 out of 10 or 32 managers. We'd be 25 would say you got it right. 7 would say you didn't. Well, it's not a perfect science, but I can tell you that more often than not, we rarely got them wrong. So you're always going to get that because teams aren't happy with the ruling. They say, no, that shouldn't, it's, you know, should the Anaheim guy be suspended for more than 5 games? You're always going to debate that. You know, the Maple Leafs are without their best player. So the debate goes on. It's an emotional game. When managers get ruled against, they get upset. They want to talk to somebody. They want an explanation. And a lot of times the best thing is to say, you know, let me look at it again. I'll call you in the morning. And by that time, the dust has settled a little bit. And you can usually deal with a rational GM. Yeah.
There's no – those two – that sentence doesn't work. Rational GM doesn't necessarily work, Mike. You know that. We've all been through that.
Yeah. Although I live – I'm – my house here in California, I'm right now about 6 houses from Kenny Holland. Kenny and Cindy rented a place right next door. So I see him on a regular basis, and he's very sane.
So the whole concept of what happens these Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, has the role of this meeting changed over the years because, you know, that your group, Coley's group, Gary, Bill have become such a dominant force in the game? The influence of the managers, has it changed?
Well, no, I think it's always it's been over my years. It's been very similar. You know, they'll put something forward, and if it's not a real strong sentiment, you know, say the group is fairly divided on it, you know, and one thing about the commissioner is he doesn't like changes unless they're going to benefit the game, and it's the old story. Is this broken? Oh, it's not. Then what are we looking at it for? And I refer to our playoffs. Some of the best sports in the world, like March Madness type sports, is the first round of the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. It's the best. It's so unpredictable. Road teams win more than home teams. And, you know, I know there's lots of people out there that want to change it. They want to have a play-in like the NBA does. And the commissioner's always been really firm in the fact, is this broken? And, you know, 32 guys say, well, no, it's not really broken, but we want to get more teams in. We want to generate more revenue. We want to do this. Then we're not changing it. And not just with that. That's just an example of one. There's other things. And he's always very level-headed and very cerebral about making changes to the game because the game is in great shape. And you got to be very careful when you do it because there's always an unforeseen consequence that arrives from changes. And he doesn't want to have to deal with those 3 months down the road when we made a change because it was a knee-jerk change. So, you know, he's the real barometer, and rightly so. And he just is brilliant at doing that.
I still remember I was lucky enough to be in managers meetings for about 5 years. And I still remember we had a meeting at the hotel at O'Hare Airport. And that's when video review really got a lot more comprehensive. And he sat there and Coley as well said, guys, if you want this, be careful for what you wish for.
Yeah.
Be careful.
Yeah.
Because every action creates a reaction and maybe more than one.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And he beats that drum all the time. You want, like, with goalie interference, we'd always get, well, there shouldn't be a penalty. Well, there has to be a consequence because otherwise every play would be reviewed. But yeah, we want you to look at that play. We want you to look at this one. And he said, well, yeah, we'll look at it. But if you want us to look at it, you're going to have to pay some consequence here. And the consequence originally was a loss of timeout, which mm-hmm. was nothing. And then we quickly learned that we're saying, okay, that's it. Now it's got to be a penalty. And the penalties worked. The penalties worked. Like, as I described that Pittsburgh-Buffalo play the other day, that was probably an error by the video coach and the coach to make that decision because you're already a man short. You're going to be two men short if you lose it. And the games, it's only one goal. It's 2-1. It's early in the game. And I think if the coaching staff thought about it again, they'd probably say, no, you know what? We can't take that risk. We took a risk we shouldn't have. And you see it happen. I mean, it happened to L.A. a year ago in an Edmonton series when they, mm-hmm. they, you know, they challenged a play that was questionable and lost and ended up, you know, giving up the lead and losing the game and losing the series. So it was those type of plays can have lots of consequence.
You talk about events happening. Actually, there was a time where you felt there was always an event like that happening just before the manager's meeting. Like the Mac Cook, Mark Savard thing was days yeah. before the manager's meeting. So yeah. the most recent one would be Nathan MacKinnon in on Connor Ingram. And MacKinnon gets called for goalie interference. The referee views that that Ingram's hurt, so he goes off the ice. That means there has to be not only a 5-minute major, but a game misconduct.
Yeah.
So how would that and now you've got officiating people in your room to yeah. discuss. How would that conversation go in terms of what the referee would see, what decision he would make, what decision the situation room would make?
Well, he would in order to go to video review on that play, he could easily give a 2-minute penalty there. But if he goes to a major, then he has to go to the video. He can go to the video and look at it. When he goes to the video and looks at it, the officiating person in our room, so it would be a Bill McCreary.
It was Bill McCreary that night.
Stephen Wacom. They would consult with the officials. And for the most part, the hockey ops guys stay out of it. You know, unless Bill turns and says, what are you guys thinking here? You know, and in this case, when I watched the play, I know it was aggressive play, but I thought it was a 2-minute penalty because I don't think MacKinnon, there was any intent to injure the goalie. It was just a collision at the crease that caused an injury. Not unlike if somebody trips somebody and he falls into the boards and hits his head, it's a 2-minute tripping penalty. It's not a major. So I didn't think it should have been a major. That would have been discussed. Bill obviously thought in consulting with the officials, they thought it was, and they called it. And I respect that. That's, you know, what they saw at that time. I think when you get a major penalty like that, the misconduct goes on, the game misconduct goes on your record. And if you accumulate too many game misconducts, then you're suspended automatically. Well, and I'm guessing, cause I wasn't active in this, but I'm sure the Colorado team called Stephen Wacom and said, we don't think this is a major penalty. We don't think it's a misconduct and we don't want that on MacKinnon's record. So,
which is what happened.
And Stephen would look at it and he would take a little time, deliberate on it. He would call the officials, probably call Bill too, and then talk about it and say, guys, I think, you know, whatever he would, you know, exert his influence, and they reduced it. And in the end, there's no long-term consequence for McKinnon, which is the right thing. The tough thing is they had to kill the 5-minute penalty, which, you know, you can't take that back now. So,
so my point, this leads to my next question is, my personal opinion is I think there should be a 5-minute major without the game misconduct in that scenario. Would that, if there was a rule change, would that start at this meeting?
Yeah. You'd have to start that meeting, and you got to be careful, because whenever there's an injury on the ice, and as you mentioned earlier, if there's an injury on a play, like a boarding play or a hit from behind play or an elbowing play, then you're looking at a 5-minute major. And in this case, there was an injury. So you'd really have to qualify it to make sure that despite the fact there was an injury, we're only giving 5. And I don't disagree with you. I think, you know, maybe 5 would have been the right answer without the misconduct. But this would be discussed at this meeting, and there wouldn't be a lot of examples of this. So that might be something you say, listen, let's push this forward. Let's talk about it in November. And if needed, we'll push it forward to next March and maybe come up with something. So, and one of the things that these meetings do is very seldom is there a knee-jerk reaction to a play. Things are discussed, files are built. We take the time to move forward with this. Like I told you, how long it took us for get goalie interference. It took a long time. It took a lot of video. It took a lot of preparation, discussion. And in the end, knee-jerk reactions to the game are wrong. You got to go slow. We got a great game. You don't stick something in there because you were all emotional at one point. And I think that is a good example, John, of what you might be able to alter the rule to encompass a play like that.
We always find out about the hockey topics that are discussed at the general manager meetings, the hot button areas, but you mentioned legal and other conversations that take place. Can you give us some examples of that?
Sure. They'd always talk about international hockey, you know, like in recently the Germany, and who's going to go and what we're looking at and how are things going and how are we growing the game in that area? We often talk about outdoor games and a lot of times, where we're going to go next, what teams are we looking at? Always contract matters, circumvention of the cap and some of the things that have happened, especially around playoff time. I'm sure this year the NCAA junior rule would be discussed, what's happening, what's it look like now that the dust is starting to settle with junior players now going to the NCAA and, where are we going with that? Central Registry, we've got the trade deadline coming up. So Central Registry would always, they'd have 4 or 5 things they'd want to discuss, make sure this is happening, make sure you've got your roster in order, make sure your call-ups are in order. Those are the type of things that would go on and some of the health issues, physicals for players. What can we do? What can't we do? What about exit physicals? So they button themselves down on all those issues. Our legal department would be there and they'd be giving a presentation, and we'd have sometimes the American Hockey League would come in and talk about, here's what's happening in our league, here's what we're doing, here's how we're growing the game. So there'd be and you know what, let me just pull my sheet up here, because there's other things. A lot of the things they talked about, we're talking, I see right here, neck guard protection, I know in the Olympics everybody wore neck guards. Like that would have to be something that would be both an NHL and an NHLPA discussion. And a lot of the things that come out of this meeting would go to a meeting in June where we'd involve the players. It's the competition committee. So all the information that we accumulate here and we say, okay, we're going to change the neck guard. Well, that'd have to go to the competition committee and the players would say, well, we're not in favor of that. So then it wouldn't go through. So those are the type of things. What else have I got here? Analyst hand pass. Always talking about warm up. We're talking about environment.
What about warm up? What? Give me an example.
violations and warm-up teams. Like, we have a 16-minute warm-up. You can't come on the ice before or stay on after. We give a 30-second leeway. And if you do, there's supposed to be a fine. So we have guys, and mostly young guys, would stay out there, and they'd be flipping pucks for a minute, 2 minutes after the warm-up is over. Well, we have ice cleaning people that have to get out there. They have to get the ice right. And now we got a player flipping pucks up in the stands, and it's inevitably happens every year. And you chart that. And now that we have such good video in the video room, they can watch. We can sit there and watch it on ourselves. We wouldn't have to have a third person manage that situation. And after a team violates three or four times, you'd call the coach and say, "Listen, these are $5,000 fines every time you violate. I'm giving you a break. Have one of your assistant coaches go in and deal with this with the team. Get off the ice when the buzzer rings. We don't need guys out there for a minute and a half flipping pucks around." That's inevitably what happens. We'd also talk about warmups where somebody wants to start something, and you don't see that too much anymore. But back in the day, we would have lots of raucouses in the warmup where guys would be skating on the other team's half a center, and there'd be a fight and pushing. Those are always issues. And one of the things, too, especially in today's world, we always have a security report. So the security people, the NHL security, comes in and gives a report. And we get memos all the time about, you know, we've got to be cautious going to the game tonight. There's going to be a protest here. Be aware of it. Don't engage. You know, so the meeting is very comprehensive. There's all, you know, and we always do a Gary Mahar used to do it. I don't know who's doing it now, but the presentation on how is the game. And he would come up with stats. You'd be floored together with video. It was really an inspirational talk, and it would go about 10, 15 minutes. And it would be how blessed we are to be involved in this game, basically, because of all the good things that are happening.
So you made me smile, because the whole concept of watching the warm-up, you couldn't do that by yourself for years and years. You had to rely on television.
Yeah.
So when Coley took the job, I remember I was still at Hockey Night. When Coley took the job, he said, is there any way you can put a camera, you know, framed up blue line to blue line so that we can make sure people don't cross the center ice red line during warmup? But now you have so many of your own cameras, and the technology is so good that you actually don't need to rely on television anymore, do you?
No. Yeah, we have, as I mentioned earlier, we have about 17 cameras in the game. We have the blue line cameras, which are great because they pick up everything. And it doesn't happen. Back when I first started working at the league in the early 2000s, man, every night there'd be something happening in the warm-up. It was a raucous league, like, and player safety was a whole different ball back then. Stick violations, spearing, you know, just awful type events. And that's all gone now. And it's a credit to the managers, you know, making rules that introduce better players, more skilled players. And I'm a big believer you have to be tough and you have to have hardness on your team. And even some guys that can fight. But I think that the skilled player, the smaller player, has been reintroduced. They've made the game better. I mean, you see, the Hughes brothers, those type of players, they're all through the league now. Real good puck-moving defensemen, real skilled players. And then a lot of that is the goofiness that comes out of the warm. You always get goofiness come playoff time. You know, somebody will whack somebody, and then somebody will infringe on the center line. It'll be the 21st guy too. He's not even dressing that night, but he's there poking at somebody or pushing at somebody. And that gets Coley irate. That's one of the things that will set him off. So
what's the most passionate thing that you've had a feeling for, or would you like to be on an agenda? So past or future?
Well, okay, this is right out in the left field, and I've always thought that there should be a penalty for leaving your feet. If you intentionally leave your feet to block a shot, it's a penalty. 2-minute penalty. Because the game, back when Shannon was a little guy, you know, years and years, that was probably at the beginning of the 19th century.
Yeah, thanks.
You didn't leave. You know, when you were playing on the pond, you didn't leave your feet. You know, the pond hog, you didn't leave your feet. You know, like, but the game has evolved into the shot blocking, and everybody's off their skates now. You know, you see in the crease, there'll be four guys laying in the crease at some points in the game. I don't know, like, you know, and I know
defending a 2-on-1, right? The guys line up.
It's taught. We taught it. Leave your feet, make the guy make that, you know, the only guy that could make it in our era was Gretzky. He could make that flip pass onto somebody's stick. But, it's you can still block shots. You just can't leave your feet, you know. Mm. So I just think it would enhance scoring. And players would adjust. Players would be fine. They would know.
Might be safer for the players, too.
Oh, there you go. You're not playing down at ice level where all the blades are and the pucks are and the stick blades. So I don't know. You know, and that's what I'm not, Darren, I'm not really passionate about it, but I'm just, you know, throwing that one out there.
Bob Gainey was always passionate about that.
Yeah. 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 Bob was, but Bob never said too much. And then when Bob spoke, they thought, he's going to walk on water here.
What's a bigger pain? Managers phoning during the night to the video room or announcers, which I'm a part of, not knowing rules and influencing their audience?
Yeah. Announcers, we can always badmouth them, you know. The managers, we can't. The managers, usually when they call you, a lot of times what I would do is I'd say, you know, let me refresh myself on the play. Let me call you right back. And yeah. I'd go and look at the play, and usually by the time I got back to them, they would be, and I'd always wait for the period to end or the game to end. And the managers don't do it much more. As I started at the beginning of our conversation, I said, one of the things the league has done, and it's a great credit to Colin because he's run that department, but even Brian Burke before, educating the people who run our game. And the managers are educated, and less do they complain because they say, well, okay, I saw that at the managers meeting, that exact play. I don't like it. I don't like it happening to my team, but I'm going to live with it because that's the way we decided. And good managers inform their coaches. They let them know, okay, coaches, listen, don't make that call when you're a man short. It's a goal interference play, and you know you're going to be two men short. You just can't make it. As much as you might think you're right, can't make it. So I do think the educational process that the commissioner and Coley have done to the league, and Bill Daly too, Bill's on so many of the legal issues and the contract issues he's on top of and helping managers with. I just think the education is so good now that you get less and less complaints. So, Darren, to answer your question, yeah, the announcers for sure.
All right. Do you miss it?
No. Do I miss the guys? Yeah. Do I miss engaging with the general managers and dealing with coaches and even bumping into players occasionally? Absolutely. I love it. It's part of me. Always will be. But do I miss the hours? Do I miss the work involved? Not at all. I'm enjoying my life a lot here in retirement and doing what I want, hanging out. I watch more games. I got 7 grandchildren that play hockey, so I'm always going to a game. And, you know, Papa, when are you coming to my game? You know, okay, I'll be there tomorrow night. So I'm living that life now, and it's been great. And my time with the league was incredible. I loved it. The people involved were incredible. I have the most admiration in the world for the Gary, Bill Daly, Coley Campbell, all the executives in there were great. They're always really, really good to me, too.
What do you do for St. Patrick's Day?
Well, hey, this is a real jam. That's my wife's birthday. How about that? March 17th, wow. My wife's birthday. So this is bedlam around here right now. If you don't have a green shirt on, we go to a place... We go to a place called Hennessy's just down the street here. So she's got her whole family coming in. Her whole family lives here in Torrance, California. So they're all going to be there. So we'll be high stepping around 5:30 this afternoon with green beer. So,
okay. Tell Yvonne I'm going upstairs to change my shirt. Okay.
I'll tell her. She's over with you. I've got 2 of my grandsons here. One's 16 who plays for St. Mike's Buzzers and one's 15 who plays under 16. Just got back from the U.S. development camp. So they're out here on vacation because it's March break and they're over having breakfast. So I'm not sure they're into the green beer yet, but it'll be soon.
Well, hold on. You got Canadians and Americans. You had grandkids that are Americans now. And you're, you know, who did you cheer for in that game in Italy?
Oh, this was totally abusive. Totally abusive. Okay. I got three sons. They all played in the U.S. hockey program. Two of them played. One of them played World Junior. One of them played for the development program. So they're Americans, and they play for Americans. All my grandchildren are Americans and Canadians. So the only people cheering for Canada in that game, in the gold medal game, were myself and my son-in-law. The rest of them are all Americans, and my wife's leading the pack there. She's got her pom-poms on, and she's got the dog wrapped in a USA scarf, and everybody's got US gear on, sweaters. It was totally abusive. And I just think, guys, we got to win this game. It was literally verbally abusive when it was over. So I'm actually thinking of making a comeback, and I'm going to be there in 4 years, you know.
Well, I tell you what, you got a precedent, 1978 World Championships. You were there, bro.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's right. I'll just wear my bronze medal around my neck. That's it.
Oh, so good to catch up with you. You're one of our favorites. We love you to death. Thanks for sharing some of the insights into the manager's meeting and the video room.
Yeah. Well, guys, always a pleasure talking to you too. I always have fun with you too. It's easy. It's easy.
Can you send me a note when you see something that I'm saying wrong?
Absolutely.
Okay. Good.
By the way, I got to give Mike some credit before we go. I was on TV for 10 years in Canada. And the best thing I ever did was about 95 seconds long, and it was called the Parallax Angle. Mm-hmm. Right, Murph?
That was awesome. Yeah, you saved my bacon, I can tell you.
And the guy who told me about it was Mike, because I'm not a math major. And by the way, neither is Murph. But that story about the Parallax Angle, and it was a goal in Calgary in the playoffs.
Yeah, whether the puck was across the line, right?
It looked like it was across the line, but if you look from above – it wasn't. And so that story, and to the point where as an announcer, I never got phone calls, but I got a call from the owner of the Calgary Flames giving me shit.
John, that's still in my file. It's still in my file. Yeah. And every once in a while, I'll pull it out. Guys, no, you can't make a call there. It's the Parallax Angle we got going. Sorry. And yesterday, I get a call from one of the guys there. They said, Murph, because I'd always say to this, to one of the our video room guys, I'd say, get kicked pucks, update it, keep it in the hopper there, because we might need it. Because if you run out of topics, kick pucks would surface. So he texts me yesterday. He says, Murph, you won't believe it. It's on the agenda today. I said, well, you should be flying me in. It's my baby. He laughed because this is 11 or 12 years. It's been sitting in the hopper, you know?
Well, the game continues to evolve. And it used to be you couldn't have a puck go off a skate. And now it's created some more offense. I think it's better for the game, but I understand the debate about it. Be well, my friend, and enjoy the stretch drive of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Good stuff, guys. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
And happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Get the green on. Get the green.
No, I will. Don't worry.
Let's see you.
Back with more on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. I don't know how we top that, though.
Can't.
With the NHL app, you can listen to every NHL game right from your phone. And with home and away broadcast feeds, you choose your way to listen.
And he scores!
Whether you're at work, at the gym, or stuck in traffic, the NHL app puts you right in the action all season long. Every team, every game, everywhere you go. Download the NHL app and never miss a moment.
Never had a bad conversation with that man, Murph.
No. He was one of those guys. So both, I spent a lot of time with Mike in my time at the league, in the video room in Toronto, because invariably there was sometimes some TV issues that needed to be handled. And it was also a great way to watch 8 or 9 games. And the other thing was that when I went to work with you guys, Darren, you could pick the phone up and say, Murph, I don't understand why that occurred and why did you rule it that way? And he would walk you through it and say, here's what the problem was, and here's what happened, and here's why we did what we did. And that gave you a tremendous amount of insight into the process that they went through. So Mike was, in many ways, for the media world, explaining what the league was doing at the right time. Mike Murphy was a tremendous ambassador for a long period of time. A long period of time.
I love the access, the camera that networks can flip over to in the Situation Room. We get to see Chris King watching these games and looking at it and dissecting it. You can't hear him, but being able to just see a little bit of it gives you a little bit more of an opportunity to have access to it. Do you ever think we'll be able to listen to a video review?
No, and that's not true. I think as long as the current administration is there, I don't think we will. You know, and it's funny, how many times did Mike talk about legal ramifications during the conversation? There are always legal ramifications, particularly when it comes to sound. You know, if there's microphones in the Situation Room, you will not get frank discussions amongst those people. And you need to be able to have a frank discussion. You need to be able to argue. You need to be able to, you know, be demonstrative to get the right decision. And if there's a microphone, people will change. People will not act the same. And you will not. And at times it may influence what final decisions are made. You know, I think they tried it at the Memorial Cup a couple of years, Darren, that you worked on. Mm-hmm. And there was enough incidents a couple of times over 3 or 4 years that got themselves saying, well, that can't be said. And again, it goes back to the legal issues of those scenarios. And so
there was a college football conference, I think it's the SEC, that broadcast their video reviews.
Yeah, well, that's their, you know, great. That's great. Football's different than hockey, though. You know that as well as I do. I still remember we had, and I don't mind telling the story now, we had a player mic'd during a game. And he sat at the faceoff circle, and he turned to the guy next to him, and he says, I'm going to kill you. I am going to kill you. That's, you know, and it, you know, the person who was from the National Hockey League was monitoring the microphones, allowed it to be played. And the amount of trouble that those very few words got all of us into, the networks, the league, the player, the Players Association, the broadcast department, it was a lesson learned. You can't hear that. Mm-hmm. You can't hear that. That will at some point be used against you. And those are the types of things that people would love to hear, but legally are, you know, just sacrosanct and should not be heard.
Okay, finish up this way. And Murph couldn't answer this because he's on that side of it. But that agenda is so closely guarded going into every general manager meetings.
Yeah.
Would it be better for the game, interest in the game, if there is transparency, knowing what was going to be discussed?
I don't think it would hurt, honestly. But the thing is, you said better for the game. This is what we're talking about now, what Mike talked about, what the managers are doing in Florida. It's for the nerds. It's for the hardcore. The hardcore is going to watch the game. The hardcore is going to have an opinion, no matter what. This is not a quote unquote grow the game moment. This is a moment for transparency within.
But if we get the agenda, we can talk about it in advance and then recap how it was discussed. Whether it's the Matthews hit, whether it's kicked in pucks.
You will hear after the fact that stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But you don't have to be a scientist to know that those things are going to be discussed. You don't. You don't have to be.
I know it's going to be discussed, but the person that's two arm lengths removed doesn't. So why not have everybody able to?
I think there's a place for it, but here's the deal. Mm. you're not going to get the whole agenda, right? You're going to get broad strokes of here are six topics we're going to discuss. And a lot of them are common sense. A lot of them are common sense ones that, you know, we don't need to see the agenda in order to say that's going to be discussed.
Okay. Just thought it'd make my my push for it.
Well, and you know, and then you and Gary Lawless can hash it out on the air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the intermission. I'm right. He's wrong. Boy, that happens a lot with me.
By
just
the way,
like here. I'm right, you're wrong.
I think that should be a title of the segment now. Forget
I'm
about
right, you're wrong?
Yeah. Because in the end, it's the first guy that speaks that gets to be the winning title.
Yeah, and then the last word. That's good. He'll clamor to introduce the segment. Welcome
That's
to
right.
I'm Right, You're Wrong.
You're wrong. That's right.
I think we got a new t-shirt, buddy.
Oh, we
got a new one.
We can sell that 100% hockey. I'm right. You're wrong.
Yeah, that's fun. Thanks for setting that up with Murph. Hope everybody has a great St. Patrick's Day or had a great St. Patrick's Day, which means I hope your head feels good. But if it doesn't, yeah. It means you had a really good one.
I am going to change my shirt right now.
McMullen's in Vegas. I don't know where you go.
I go to the pump. Are you kidding me?
Well, I'll raise a glass to you.
The Clarkson pump with green beer.
Not a big green beer guy, but I am a beer boy. So
it tastes the same. Tastes the same.
Just something off about it. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll talk to you again on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
I'm right. You're wrong.
Millard and Shannon.
Alphabetical.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.